Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a vodcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very senior and accomplished professional from Lexington, Massachusetts, USA, Beth Masterman. Beth, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Beth is the president of Masterman Executive Coaching Incorporated. She's an author, and all of you know I'm very partial to authors. She's a co-author of a book titled My Prism. So Beth, before we talk about your book and coaching, tell me a little bit about your own journey in brief.
My own journey. Well, my journey has been a journey of discovery, creativity, and somewhat of a solitary journey, although I've been surrounded by family and friends. I've always felt like I have my own interests, my own way of going, as many people do. So I grew up in Lexington, Massachusetts, and I went to a local school. Then I went and I got my BA at Wesleyan University in Connecticut. There I was a major in psychology, which ends up being part of the story. From there, I worked on some presidential campaigns. And then I went to law school. And after law school, I became a prosecutor. And I did that for about three, four years, and then started a family. The marriage didn't work out ultimately, but it gave me the freedom to be able to be with my children for close to 10 years. And also during that time, I got my master's in psychology because I have a real affinity for and natural aptitude for human behavior, for seeing patterns, and for sort of seeing how groups coalesce and where the influence pressure points are. Anyway, I then worked as, I went back to work after being out for a period with my children. I returned as general counsel to a state senator. We worked on the utilities. We deregulated the utilities in Massachusetts. And then from there, you know, I was a lobbyist for a while. And then I realized that it just wasn't hitting the mark of what I do best. So I went and I got my certificate in executive coaching and I started my business in 2012.
Wow.
That's the summary.
And as they say, the rest is history.
The rest is history.
Wonderful. So Beth, let's talk about your book first. You know, you're the co-author of a book titled My Prism. I'm going to ask all our viewers and listeners to go and check out Beth Masterman's book, My Prison. I'll go and do the same thing. So tell me a little bit about your book. What was your hypothesis when you wrote this with your co-authors?
Well, that sounds like a very organized way of approaching the book, but that is really not how it happened. This was a product of the pandemic. I'm a member or a founding fellow of the Institute of Coaching, which is an organization affiliated with Harvard Medical School. And the idea behind the IOC was that if we're going to say that coaching is great and helpful and works, they want to know, how do you know that? So the medical school started under the aegis of the medical school doing research on some of the claims of coaching. And they have put together an amazing body of research supporting our claims that coaching works and works well. So during the pandemic, when nobody could do anything anymore, they started to hold huddles where fellows from around the world would get together and talk. And in the course of that, I met five other coaches from around the world, Brazil, Germany, Singapore, one other woman in Philadelphia, fellow in Chicago, and I. And we just connected and we started meeting independently. And we wrote a paper on resilience. And then we were having a good time and we continued. You know, what's going on now? What are we noticing for leaders in this situation of uncertainty, tremendous uncertainty? We came up with a mnemonic, My Prism, which stands for, each letter stands for something. And we each took a chapter. We edited each other's chapters and we came up with a book by all of us.
Amazing. So you know, when I was reading a summary of your book, you begin with the concept of autopilot in leadership.
Correct.
And can you help me understand how the concept affects leaders and why is it crucial for them to recognize and manage their own autopilot responses?
If you think of autopilot, and feel free to think of the autopilot metaphor of your car, it's really a collection, it's a cluster of habits that lead you to believe that you're okay, that you're going in the right direction, that you're safe and secure and in control. Sometimes, and probably more times than not, the autopilot serves us well. It's efficient, and we can move forward without getting stuck on details. There are those times, like the pandemic, for example, where autopilot is getting in the way. How do you get off of it with confidence when you know you're going to have to stop doing what you believe in? How do you then take that step? And how that affects leaders is that people turn to leaders mostly when they are feeling uncertain. They're feeling afraid. They don't have the answer, but neither does the leader. For example, in the pandemic, what does that leader need to do? Being a leader isn't an accident. I think some people are born with certain skills and other people learn those skills. When you are in a condition of uncertainty, it's up to the leader to do that better than others. To get it together, to come up with a new mindset and a new model, a believable possibility, and then sell it to the people that are depending on you.
Very interesting.
So that's basically it. The burden on the leader is
well
higher
said.
To move
well
through
said.
That more quickly.
Well said. My next question is that the P and the R in my prism stand for perspectives and reality, and I'm assuming you worked on these areas. How do these principles interplay in a leader's journey towards mindful leadership? And what are some common challenges in aligning perspectives and reality?
Well, I love the way you ask that question, because you get right to the heart of how the model, my prism, works. When you understand this model, and if you don't mind, I'll just tell you what the other letters stand for.
Please, yeah.
M, Y, my, mindfulness, and Y. We just use the letter Y, but Y. P, R, perspective, reality. I is inquiry. S is staging. And M is move.
Okay.
But you gotta move.
Yeah.
And when you really understand this this model, you can enter at any letter. So your question asked me, how do you become a mindful leader? Starting with perspective and reality. And that's exactly right. So perspective simply means put yourself in the head of somebody else. What would that other person be seeing? It could simply be somebody standing on the other side of the road, you know, seeing something different. But to develop the agility to be able to let go of your point of view and really see it from multiple. So when I'm working with a client, for example, we just go through the exercise of coming up with as many different possibilities as that there may be, just to build that muscle.
Right.
And to do it with neutrality. So that's perspective. And then reality. All right, what's really going on here? And because we never really know, right? Reality is an agreement among people who are perceiving things. What are we going to agree on?
Right.
What are we going to hold as fixed in this situation that keeps changing? And so these are a bunch of little agreements that a leader is able to affect along the way.
Very well said.
Did that answer?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. So, you know, you talked about the why, and we, you know, very often I've heard this, what is your why? Understand your why, know your why. But for my young viewers and listeners, tell me, how does understanding the why transform a leader's approach to challenges and decision making?
Okay. Why? Why is it important to you? That's basically it.
Correct.
Why is this gonna, what is it about this situation that resonates with me? And because I'm able to take the perspective, because I'm a leader, I can take the perspective of the other people that I'm speaking with. What is the impact going to be on them? Why does that matter?
Right.
And that's really what it's about. It, I mean, you can write volumes on how to apply why, but it's very simply what makes that resonate. And that's what it is. And if you don't have that understanding, you're not going to move with certainty, with confidence. It doesn't mean you can't change your mind along the way, but it's about the presence. And when you believe you know the purpose, the impact, the importance, you just move in the world with more gravitas. People
Well
will
said.
follow.
Well said. Well said. Thank you. So one more question relating to your book, and then I'll move to a few questions on coaching. Beth, how do the principles of My Prism apply across different cultural contexts in leadership? And are there any particular challenges or adaptations required?
The good news about this book is that we wrote it. The authors are from all over the world.
Okay.
We're all very experienced coaches, thousands and thousands of hours. And we were able to come to agreement fairly quickly because what we're focusing on is human behavior. And there are some basics at work in human behavior. And I really don't think there's much adaptation. When people feel afraid, they're going to fight, they're going to flee, they're going to freeze. And a new one is they're going to befriend. You befriend the power. You befriend the one that you're afraid of so they don't hurt you. So I do think that because we are biological, neurological beings wired similarly, that as we express our humanity in social settings and professional settings, a lot of it's the same. And this model, My Prism, is a structure that has a lot of flex in it. What is your perspective in your context, whether that's in Singapore, India, or Massachusetts,
Well said, well said. So Beth, I'm now going to move to a few questions for you on coaching.
Okay.
And, you know, in your introduction, you told me about the amazing background that you've had, you know, from supporting a political or being a part of some presidential campaigns to being a counsel for some senators to becoming a coach and an author. My first question is, how would you describe your coaching philosophy and how does it set you apart from a lot of other coaches?
Well, my philosophy really is that coaching for performance is fundamentally about freedom and trust.
Right.
First, self-trust, and then trusting others. But it's a nuanced kind of trust of others. It's more of a predictive trust. How much can I rely on my understanding of my surroundings so that I'm pretty sure things are going to happen if I do X? You know, it's sort of a predictive trust, but it's enough to be able to move in the world. So what I try to help my clients do is to shed the pressures of the context and look at things fresh as if they had total freedom to express their strengths. Underlying that is my assumption that they wouldn't be where they are unless they possess certain competencies and personality traits that would make it possible for them to succeed. But for whatever reason, they're triggered, they're not able. So it's about freedom. It's about cracking open the shell, the protective shell. So I try in my sessions, and this is what makes me a little different. I have a master's in psychology, so I'm very comfortable with the human being. They can bring anything into the room.
Yeah.
And I will say, so how does that affect you at work? We then take the humanity and we put it back into the context of work. And then we dig there. What qualities need to come out? What parts of you need to come out to offset that thing that's getting in your way? Or how can you look at it differently? So it's about freedom.
Very interesting. Okay.
As a lawyer, my legal training makes me different because when I was a prosecutor, basically what you do is you ask open-ended questions. You don't need the witness, right? Ask the open-ended questions so the witness can put themselves in trouble with their own words. And that's who, what, where, when, why, how. Those are open-ended questions. And that's what you do in coaching.
Amazing.
So I'm very good at finding those questions, creating those questions out of conversation, and helping them to deeper and deeper.
Well said. Great response. Thank you. And how do you help leaders cultivate a deeper sense of self-awareness? And why is this important?
There are a lot of different avenues into self-awareness. Technically, I use Myers-Briggs, I use DISC, I do 360s, and Hogan. I'll also do some values mining. And what I do with those assessments is simply create a conversation with somebody that I don't know very well, and they don't know me. And we're talking in pretty good depth about how they come across in life. So I've accelerated the rapport. And I've accelerated the ability of the client to objectify themselves, to just look at themselves as one player. And that's why I use them, not to find out the truth about the person, but for the sake of the conversation. There are a lot of different models of self. Like another one that has had a very big impact on me is the Inner Family Systems by Richard Schwartz. And he says the self is made of certain qualities. It's calm, clear, curious, compassionate, courageous, connected, and creative.
Wow.
So I have those C's written on a board, and I look at them during a session, and I try to see, well, you know, how far away are they from this sense of calm confidence?
Right, right.
And I try to augment that.
Well said. Another question that I picked up when I was reading about you is leaders struggling with difficult conversations. What advice do you have to offer such individuals?
That's a very common concern.
Absolutely.
And what I have done was, you know, review the literature, and I wrote a white paper that I share with my clients. And difficult conversations, there are conversations that you avoid. You know them, right? They're ones you just don't really have. You hope it will go away. So what I try to coach them toward is being candid and clear upfront. And what is a successful conversation? A successful, difficult conversation is one that creates mutual understanding. It does not have to resolve a situation.
Right.
Simply, you're moving from paralysis to conversation. So you invite the person in and you say, this is a very important part. It sounds uncomfortable, but it really works. You simply say, hi, I'd like to have what could be a difficult conversation. Or there's something that I want to talk about with you. It's a little uncomfortable for me. It might be uncomfortable for you. So you're giving the other person the gift of a pause, of a warning, and it something happens internally. Once they know this could be hard, they get prepared. And 9 times out of 10, unless you're going to say you're fired, it's never as difficult as the person fears it's going to be. And if you just create mutual understanding, oh, I understand what you mean, or oh, I understand why you did that, then you make another appointment to continue the conversation, but you're just breaking the impasse, and then things change.
Well said. I have time for 2 more questions for you. My next question is, can you share with us the process of identifying and addressing leadership blind spots?
well, a client won't know they have them. because they're blind to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I, as a coach, will find them and mm-hmm. reveal them is really through listening. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's really no other way. And yeah. I listen for omissions. I listen for patterns. I listen and observe how the energy in their body might change.
Mm-hmm.
If you're avoiding something, there may be a quick mm-hmm. withdrawal or something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of that is through empathy, through really trying to understand the other person's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that I can see where there's something that's amiss.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even necessarily know what it is once mm-hmm. I start that line of question. I say, you know, something, it just, it, I don't, I'm just, some, I'm really unclear about this. Could we talk more about this? And I will go with them deeper into this murky area and seek clarity.
Mm. Very interesting. And my last question to you, Beth, and I've asked this question from many, many people who are coaches.
Okay.
How significant is emotional intelligence in leadership, and how can it be developed?
You know, we're whole human beings.
Mm.
And I think emotional intelligence, it's very, very important. But I also think it came into popularity as a way of sending the message to people, you know, you're not just a brain.
Yeah.
You're not just a set of hands doing a task.
Mm-hmm.
You are a whole person. And in fact, I don't know if you're familiar with heart math.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole idea that your entire body is receiving information. Right, from the world. Your heart is communicating with you. Your gut is communicating with you.
Mm.
We've been trained to not listen, to figure it out.
Yeah.
So emotional intelligence is really, again, using what we've been given and paying attention. And, and it's about humanity.
Yeah.
You know, I do think some people are born with less capacity for those subtleties. And we know that, well, you know, people on the spectrum who can be very high functioning, ultimately in society, mm-hmm. some people just sort of miss that.
Yeah.
Very important social tip. And and so you can learn emotional intelligence. You can learn the cluster of behaviors associated with high emotional intelligence so that you are part of a social matrix, not causing problems for yourself mm-hmm. and others. You can learn that.
Well said.
But it's fundamentally yeah. because we have been ignoring the richness that our entire being provides us with for communication.
Mm. Well said.
Start paying attention.
Yeah, well said. Beth, on that note, I just want to say thank you so much for speaking to me about your own incredible journey. You know, you seem to have done so many different things, and I think you've finally found your calling or found your ikigai. Thank you for speaking to me first about your book, My Prism. I think that was so fascinating how a group of five or six of you came together during the COVID pandemic and put together a book from the papers that you wrote. I think there's a lot of knowledge that you spoke about in the few minutes that we have got spoken, and I'm sure there's a lot of value in the book. So I'm going to ask all of yours to go and check it out again. Thank you also for speaking to me about coaching. You know, I think some amazing points I picked up from you. Thank you again for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.